Thank you for downloading the Lancashire Mining Museum Mining Trail audio guide. This audio guide will give information at each stopping point and directions to the next point on the map. Once you have arrived at the starting point, please press play. After each direction, you will hear a long beep where you should press pause on your device. Once you have followed the directions, press play to hear information about the relevant point on the map. This will be followed by the next set of directions.
Trail 2, Astley to Lee, Coal and Cotton by Canal. Red Route, an approximately 2-hour circular walking or cycling route of 5.6 miles, 9 kilometres, involving some off-road footpaths, allow extra time for sharing information at points of interest.
1. Lancashire Mining Museum, Astley Green Colliery, 1908 to 1970. The Clifton and Kersley Coal Company sank the two new shafts off Higher Green Lane using the German drop shaft method, the first to do so in England because of the water and quicksands encountered. The drop shaft or sinking drum process involved forcing a cylinder through the heavily watered peat and loose layers to the rock head and excavating within it. The seams went under chat moss, which meant water was continually dripping down, making work very wet and very hot. The standing headgear, one of two formerly here, is the last surviving of the former South Lancs coalfield. A colliery railway moved coal from the screens to the Liverpool and Manchester Railway, but some coal was transported to power stations at Trafford Park and Stretford using the Bridgewater Canal. Sadly, there was an accident at Astley Green on the 6th of June 1939 when five men, including the manager, died in an explosion of fire damp. But in 1956, 36-year-old deputy Alf Hughes received the Daily Herald Order of Industrial Heroism, or the Workers' VC, for rescuing 30-year-old electrician Brian Walker when he was being dragged into a mechanical coal cutting and conveying machine. Alf was presented with his medal at Astley and Tilsley Miners' Welfare Institute, or Gin Pit Club. Outside of the museum, now a village green, once stood the pit head baths, canteen and medical centre designed for the Miners' Welfare Committee by architect C. Kemp. They were built in 1935-36 at a cost of over £24,000.
Leave the museum, walk up the road and turn left onto Higher Green Lane. Stop outside Bamboo.
Two. Number 128, currently Bamboo, was the former home of local historian John Lunn. It was also a fish and chipped potato dealer run by his mother. Lunn studied at Manchester University, then Cambridge, then returned to Astley and became a teacher in local schools. His A Short History of the Township of Astley was published in 1931. Numbers 130 to 130C used to be the Ross's Arms. When it was first licensed in 1855, it was named the Astley Arms, but it was then later renamed in honour of Colonel Malcolm Nugent Ross of the 5th Regiment of the Royal Lancashire Militia, the second husband of Sarah Dury of Dam House. The original Astley Green pit whistle was on display here for many years.
Cross Boatman's Row and continue towards the Canal Bridge.
3. The old boathouse was formerly the Boathouse, and before that the Hope and Anchor Inn. It was originally built with stabling for horses that pulled the barges, but has since been extended. The original building is the section next to the canal. Its beer garden is a good place to be a gongoozler, a person who enjoys watching activities on the canal, particularly at locks. Visit here for refreshments and WC.
Continue along Higher Green Lane over the canal bridge. Stop at the bottom of the bridge.
4. Astley Bridge. Bridge number 58 was built in 1920 and is made of iron, so it can be raised to counter the effects of mining subsidence. It replaced two earlier canal bridges built to connect Lower and Higher Green. Over the bridge you can see the former Wesleyan Methodist Sunday School and Church off Lower Green Lane, which has now been transformed into chapel apartments. The original chapel opened in 1806 on a piece of land donated by Benjamin Kniveton, a tunneller on the Bridgewater Canal who lived at Whitehead Hall. When that building caught fire, a new chapel was built and a Sunday School building was added, which later became the chapel. When this building became too difficult to maintain, it closed and its congregation became part of the Methodist churches in Astley and Tilsley.
Cross Lower Green Lane and follow the path to the canal towpath. Stop next to the base of the bridge.
5. The land that runs alongside the canal is called the towpath, as it was originally used by horses to tow or pull boats along the canal. The inns and wharfs along the canal used to offer stables to accommodate the horses when boats moored up, though not everyone could afford the fee for overnight stabling. Steam and diesel engines gradually replaced horsepower, but the last working horseboat only finished in 1960. The opposite side to the towpath is known as the offside bank, where Astley Cotton Mills used to stand on Peel Lane. James and Robert Arrowsmith built the mills in 1833. They also built cottages for their workers. The mills were 4 stories high and by 1892 had 10,000 spindles and 500 looms weaving fustians, velvets, angolas and twills. They were powered by steam produced by burning coal. In 1919, a new engine house and weaving sheds were built around the old structure. But, ironically, mining subsidence from Astley Green Colliery damaged the foundations of the old mills and they closed in 1955. There used to be housing along the towpath side of the canal, but subsidence caused the canal to sink by more than 18 feet and it had to be banked up with colliery refuse and concrete. Here and there the surface was then level with the roofs of nearby cottages making them uninhabitable and they had to be pulled down. The Bridgewater Canal was built by Francis Egerton, the 3rd Duke of Bridgewater, to transport coal from his Lancashire collieries. This section, the Lee Branch, was opened in 1795 to transport coal from the new Lee collieries. Locally, it was known as the Duke's Cut, a cut being a boater's term for canals because they were literally cut out of the land. Following the Duke's death in 1803, the Earl of Ellesmere inherited his estates. By 1923, the estates and collieries were owned by Bridgewater Collieries, a subsidiary of Bridgewater Estates, which later became part of Manchester Collieries. The Bridgewater Canal was sold to the Manchester Ship Canal Company, now a subsidiary of the Peel Group. You are now following the Bridgewater Way.
Continue along the towpath towards Lee. Stop at the next pinch point where the canal narrows and a pipe bridge crosses it.
6. You can now see the brick supports of the former Peel Hall Bridge, which was an occupation bridge for workers to get to Peel Hall Farm. The former bridge supports now carry the Peel Hall Pipe Bridge, which carries gas across the canal. The Bridgewater Canal cut straight through the Peel Hall estate, coming close to the house's south facade. A little further along where the canal widens is Peel Hall Winding Hole, where boats can turn round.
Continue along the towpath towards Lee. Stop at Lingard's Bridge.
7. Lingard's Bridge is a relatively modern step footbridge, which replaced an older bridge named after the Lingard family, who farmed the surrounding land. There used to be a boatyard here, but it ceased operating in the 1930s after almost 100 years. Some bridges on the canal have been adapted to act as a support for water or sewerage pipes, and in this case, 3 steel water pipes have been used to form an arch that supports the deck of the footbridge. If you listen closely, you can hear the water flowing through the pipes.
Continue along the towpath towards Lee. Stop at Morley's Bridge.
8. Morley's Bridge was an occupation bridge for workers to get to Morley's Hall Farm, a Grade 2 listed building on the edge of Astley Moss. The original moated building has since been converted into two houses. When owned by the Catholic Tilsley family, the hall hosted secret Catholic services. In 1641, a priest called Edward Ambrose Barlow was arrested at such a service and subsequently executed and later canonised as St Ambrose Barlow. The bridge was replaced by a new one in 1932 to carry the Liverpool East Lancashire Road, or East Lancs Road, A580, which was opened by George V on July the 18th, 1934. It was designed to connect Manchester and East Lancashire to the Port of Liverpool and was the UK's first purpose-built intercity highway.
Continue along the towpath towards Lee. Stop at Marsland Green Bridge.
9. Marsland Green Bridge. Note the wooden posts at either side of the bridge to protect it against wear and tear from tow ropes and the narrows, a short length of canal with width room for only one narrowboat beyond the bridge.
Leave the towpath and walk up to the top of the bridge.
10. A coal tipping wharf used to stand on the offside bank, which served the Tilsley Pit complex of Jim Pitt, Nook and St George's Collieries. The wharf was cut into the north bank and extended behind the houses along Marsland Green Lane. There was also a coal tipper and a boatyard, with many of the boatmen who worked the canal living in nearby houses or on the boats. The large house on the south towpath by the bridge served the area as the Bridge Inn pub. It was the extension of the Bridgewater Canal to Lee that triggered the development of mining around Tilsley by providing an efficient means of transporting the coal. John Darlington, owner of Jim Pitt Colliery, built a narrow gauge tramway worked by horses to transport coal from the pit. The wharf also served the Hindley Smithy. There is a winding hole here for boats to turn around in.
Continue over the bridge and walk down Marsland Green Lane. At the bottom, turn left onto Manchester Road. Cross Manchester Road and Lodge Lane, then enter Lee Cemetery. Or visit the Manchester Road Cafe and Sandwich Bar opposite for refreshments and WC. This is a passport point.
11. Lee Cemetery opened in 1856, funded by Wesley, Pennington, Bedford and Astley Townships. Follow the central path until you reach the crossroads in Area 11, where you will see a tall grey monument on your right. The Bedford Colliery Monument is dedicated to those who lost their lives in an explosion on Monday the 13th of August 1888. At 11:30 a.m. that morning, the news spread that there was a fire at Speakman's Colliery, or Wood End, and crowds gathered waiting for news. An explosion had taken place in No. 2 Pit near to Lyons Bridge off the avenue. Several miners had felt the effects and gone to the pit eye. The colliery owner, John Speakman, was confined to bed, so his son, Ernest, withdrew the men from the mine and led the rescue party. They put up brattice cloths to restore ventilation and extinguish the flames. Among the first brought up was John Woolley, who was burned about the face and hands and had a badly cut forehead. Woolley was a day wageman who had only started at the pit the previous Saturday. He had been a watch repairer, but trade was bad and his wife was too ill to work, so he went back to work as a collier. The night before, he had had a dream that he and his mate would be killed. He and Henry Parsonage were drawing props and William Brown and Alfred Mort were filling tubs. Brown put his lamp between his legs to pick up a spade when there was a blaze that went into his lamp. He threw his spade down and started blowing out his lamp, but it wasn't buried, so he shook it about and it burst the gauze. A flash came out of the gauze and there was an explosion and all the lamps went out. The after damp knocked Woolly down, but he managed to scramble over some tubs, then ran as hard as he could until he saw a rescuer's light. It took a week to recover all the bodies. 38 died, most of them under 30 years old from the Bedford area. St Thomas's brass band played at the head of a parade that formed at Lee Liberal Club, processed along Church Street, Market Street, Chapel Street, and ended at the cemetery. John Speakman's grave can be found in Area 11 too if you follow the right-hand fork of the path round to the left. Return to the crossroads and take the right-hand path. Look for number 1 section on your left for the grave of Alfred Wilkinson VC. Alfred Wilkinson won his VC for an act of bravery in World War I when he ran, under shellfire, to deliver an important message about reinforcements. Sadly, he later died whilst working in the surveyor's laboratory at Brickisher Colliery, killed by carbon monoxide fumes from a block chimney. On the morning of his death, he'd received a letter informing him that he had been granted a commission in the Pioneer Corps during World War II. He was buried with full military honours. Return to the path and continue to Area 6. On your right, you will see a tall, polished granite monument to Samuel Short. 13. Samuel Short was an engineer at St George's Colliery in Tilsley and had worked for Astley and Tilsley Collieries for 30 years. On the 12th of September 1902, he was lowering 24 workmen into the mine when he was suddenly overcome by a fatal seizure. But, incredibly, he managed to apply the brake before he died. He was only 52. A fund raised £75, 6 shillings and 11 pence. The monument cost £45 and the remainder was given to his widow along with £50 from Astley and Tilsley Collieries Limited. The story of his act of bravery went around the world in the international press.
Retrace your steps along the path towards the junction. Walk back up the central walkway and leave Lee Cemetery. Turn right onto Manchester Road and walk to Sutton Park, home of Lee Miners Rangers.
14. Lee Miners Rangers Club was formed in 1978 to fill a gap left by the demise of senior school rugby. The club has produced over 100 professional players, including Dennis Betts, Darren Wright, Tommy Martin, Simon Booth, Scott Naylor, Stephen Blakely, Mickey Higham, Paul Rowley, Stuart Donlan and Stuart Littler. The senior club played at Lee Miners Welfare Institute off Twist Lane. Rugby was first played at Rugby Public School in 1823, but gradually spread throughout the country. Like mining, it was tough, physically demanding, and relied heavily on teamwork, so it isn't surprising that so many mining areas produced teams. Lee Rugby Club started up at Buck's Farm, Pennington, in 1878. In 1883, a team from Thorn Colliery in Wakefield won the Yorkshire Cup, which upset many of the RFU, who didn't like being beaten by working-class players. It was the refusal to allow such players to receive financial compensation for taking time off work that led to rugby splitting in two in 1895. Lee was one of the breakaway clubs that formed the Northern Union and had many miners in its ranks. They had to be very disciplined and safety-conscious underground, which perhaps explains why the referees in rugby league have always received more respect than their counterparts in football, and why so many miners enjoyed the controlled aggression of the rugby league after a shift.
Look across the road at the school opposite.
15. Opposite stands Bedford High School. The senior school building set back on the left used to be Lee Grammar School from 1932 to 1976, when it closed and went comprehensive. The school had a proud history of producing engineering students, many of whom went on to work in the later, more mechanised years of the mining industry.
Continue along Manchester Road. Turn right at the island next to the Bowling Green into Green Lane, or visit the Bowling Green for refreshments and WC. Cross Green Lane and walk until you reach the older detached house, Woodlawn, on your left.
R1. Woodlawn was built in 1909 by Alfred Turner, who ran a successful plumbing business on Chapel Street. His only son, Geoffrey, who was 6 foot, 3.5 inches, became the 1927 Northern Counties high jump champion with a leap of 5'11". He represented his country 7 times and competed at the Amsterdam Olympics in 1928, where he was unplaced. But in 1929, he jumped 6 foot, 4.5 inches, which took him to the top of the 1929 European high jump rankings and to equal 5th in the world. The same year, he equalled the British record with a leap of 6 foot 5 inches at Widnes, but there were no qualified officials present, so it couldn't stand. In 1932, he bought Firtree Farm in Stretton, but was taken ill with septic tonsils. Despite desperate attempts to save him, he died aged only 24. He was due to go to the Los Angeles Olympics, and his wedding day was only 4 weeks away. His fiancée, Miss Nora Spellman, of Earlstown, eventually inherited Woodlawn and never married. Geoffrey was buried at Lee Cemetery. Turnaway at Lee Sports Village is named after him.
Continue along Green Lane, cross Thornycroft and Wash Lane. Where the road divides, take the left branch and cross Rosedale Drive. Where the road divides again, take the left branch and continue along Green Lane until you see the path on your right leading into the estate. Follow the path. Cross Firkloff Park Drive and continue past the play equipment. Stop on the green.
This area had a long tradition of small coal pits, but John Speakman began sinking 2 shafts south of the railway line in 1874. And by 1876, coal was being produced at the new Bedford collieries. Bedford was also known as Wood End, the wood being Bedford or Hoffwood at Lilford Park. 2 shafts were sunk to the Crombuck mine. Number 1 pit was the upcast, while number 2 pit acted as downcast. Number 2 pit was later deepened to the 7 feet or black and white mine and the Trencherbone mine. Different grades of coal were extracted from different seams, e.g. household and manufacturing coal from the Crombuck seam. One local resident remembered the habits of the colliers in the 1870s. Wages were paid fortnightly, but no work would be done on the following Monday. On this day, it was not uncommon for the groups of men to indulge in some sort of spree, which usually lasted till evening. For food during these escapades, the help of mine host and his wife were enlisted, and most willingly given in the provision of potato pies, pasties, etc. It was here in 1888 that 38 men and boys lost their lives in an explosion on the 13th of August. Speakman's sidings were created between Tilsey Station and Bedford Lee Station, along with the private mineral railway line to Guest Street. Bedford Colliery was owned by the Speakman family until it was amalgamated with Manchester Collieries in 1929, and its railway was connected to the Astley and Tilsley Collieries railway system between Nook and Jim Pitt Collieries. The colliery became part of the National Coal Board in 1947. In 1965, Granada TV filmed the scenes at the colliery for The Daughters of the Vicar by D.H. Lawrence, adapted by Lee-born Peter Eckersley. In the same year, Mrs. Sheila Barlow, the Bedford Colliery Queen, was crowned the Lancashire Gala Queen. She won £50 and a free holiday in Morecambe. Bedford Colliery was originally scheduled to close in 1963 due to exhaustion of supplies, but its miners built up such a high output rate that it was hailed for setting a good example to the rest of the Lancashire coalfield. However, in 1967, NCB chiefs told representatives of the 700 men that, despite its high production figures, it now had to close to prevent needless subsidence damage, particularly to a new sewerage scheme. The Walmsley Farm Housing Development is named after the farm and the nearby house, the Walmsleys, later inhabited by John Speakman, who sunk the New Bedford Colliery. When Bedford Colliery was bought by the Coal Board in 1947, the Walmsleys became the pit manager's house. 10 of the housing estate streets are named after miners who died in the Bedford Colliery disaster of 1886. Fairclough Park Drive after Thomas Fairclough, aged 34. Hadfield Grove after Alan Hadfield, aged 21. Mort Close after Alfred Mort, aged 25, and Richard Mort, aged 26. Clayton Green after Thomas Clayton, aged 25. Daniels Close after Michael Daniels, aged 44. Hampson Court after Stephen Hampson, aged 61. Cook Close after John Cook, aged 17. Heaton Green after William Heaton, aged 14. Stirrup Close after Thomas, William and Peter Stirrup, aged 13, 18 and 43. Worthington Place after Isaac Worthington, aged 38.
Continue along Walmsley Meadow Road, crossing Bowden Green Drive until you reach Queensway. Cross Queensway, then cross the parallel road, Carisbrook Road, and enter Waverley Grove. At the end of Waverley Grove, cross Imperial Drive and follow the footpath across the central green area.
36. In the middle stands the unmarked Old Bedford Colliery's marker stone. Richard Pickering Higginson began the Old Bedford Collieries around 1830 between Higher and Lower Fold and built the Walmsleys. At least four pits were accessed by Coal Pit Lane, which led off Green Lane. They were bought by W.E. Milner to quarry lime, then sold to Samuel Jackson, a salt merchant, who also bought the Astley and Bedford Collieries narrow gauge tramway to the Bridgewater Canal at Marsland Green. In 1850, William Clegg was filling in one of the old shafts when he fell in and died. In 1857, the collieries were owned by John Speakman, owner of Priestner's, Bankfield and Broad Oak Collieries in Westleigh. They closed in 1864.
Follow the footpath across the central green area at the back of the playground and turn right onto Richmond Drive. Cross Coronation Drive and follow the footpath across to Windsor Road. Walk to the end of Windsor Road and turn right onto Royal Drive. Follow Royal Drive and where it bends to the right, take the footpath across the field to enter Collier's Wood.
Collier's Wood, a 130-hectare woodland, was planted as part of the Forestry Commission's Community Forest Scheme to create recreation and conservation facilities in the northwest. Trees were planted on the site of the former Kermishaw Nook Colliery, see the Chilsley Trail 1, and its slag heaps to stabilise the surface soil, improve the soil quality and provide habitats for wildlife. The wood has over 5 kilometres of path networks and great views across the borough to Winter Hill.
At the crossroads of paths, take the path to the right, which leads to Lodge Lane.
38. Bedford Lodge Farm at the top of Lodge Lane was part of the Bedford Township. In 1851, Joseph Darlington was living here and using the property for his offices. In the 1840s, he leased the mineral rights belonging to Astley Hall, Dam House, and sank Astley Colliery, which later became Jim Pitt. His company became known as Astley and Bedford Collieries. He eventually sold his colliery and coal wharf to Samuel Jackson, the owner of Old Bedford Collieries. When he died in 1867, the house became offices for the Astley and Tilsley Collieries Company, and in later years, a farm. The area at the other end of Lodge Lane was known as Club Common.
Follow Lodge Lane with Lee Cemetery on your right until you reach Manchester Road. Turn left and walk along Manchester Road. Stop a little way past the boundary sign on the opposite side of the road. The Welcome to Lee sign features a colliery headgear and the former Abram Bickershaw Colliery Band.
Bickershaw Colliery Band. On vesting day, the 1st of January 1947, the National Coal Board took over 950 pits with their associated buildings, farmland and homes, and brass bands on behalf of the people. The brass bands were either linked directly to the colliery that employed the musicians or indirectly by name and or wage deduction contributions. The prize-winning Bickershire Colliery Band was originally formed as Abram Colliery Band in 1919. In the beginning, both its instruments and playing standards were poor. Abram Coal Company's managing director, Augustus M. Hart, was ambitious, but the band remained mediocre until his son, Major Ernest Hart, MC, Military Cross, took over in 1934. A strict disciplinarian who expected high standards of all his employees, including the band members, the more he invested, the better he expected the results to be. Before the band competed at Alexandria Palace in 1938, the major told its members that if they didn't win, they should all jump in the English Channel. When they came second, he relented and gave them a £10 bonus each, but repeatedly threatened to close the band if standards didn't improve. The band went on to win the British Open in 1940, 1943 and 1946, and were in constant demand for public concerts and recordings by the BBC. Playing a brass instrument put a man at a distinct advantage when it came to getting a job at the colliery, and most of the musicians were given surface jobs as it was easier to give them time off for competitions. But when the NCB took over Bickershire Colliery, they withdrew the musicians' retaining fees, so Major Hart took the band from the colliery and arranged for it to rehearse at the Boar's Head. When the band came fifth at Bellevue that year, Major Hart suspended its activities and temporarily closed it down. He later gave the men their uniforms and instruments as a token of his appreciation. On Saturday, the 23rd of September 1950, Major Hart was killed by an express train on the railway line a few hundred yards from his home at Lowton Grange. He was 59. The coroner's verdict was suicide whilst of an unsound mind.
Continue along Manchester Road towards Astley. Stop outside the Archer pub.
Manchester Road is the old medieval trackway to Astley, Boothstown, Salford and Manchester, and was originally known as Town Lane. Although there are no fields on this side of the road, there used to be a lime kiln and a brick field along this stretch. The Archer was formerly the Manchester Road Inn, which was in existence from at least the 1880s. On the opposite side of the road, there was farmland belonging to the intriguingly named Solomon's Temple Farm.
Continue along Manchester Road and stop opposite the Cart and Horses.
The Cart and Horses has been a pub since at least 1835. It originally stood on the opposite corner until 1920, when it moved into the Farmworths or Town Lane House. The house was named after the wealthy family who lived there. They were descended from a fustian manufacturer turned farmer whose son, John, founded the Bedford Brewery with Richard Guest of Lee. Fustian is a thick, hard-wearing twilled cloth with a short nap, usually dyed in dark colours. Two of Guest's sons, Thomas and Peter, founded the Union Mill in Bedford Lee, but were in conflict with each other. St Mary's RC High School stands on the side of two rows of cottages known locally as Triangle Row. One brother built the first row, and the other brother built the adjoining row to deliberately spoil the view. The small cottage, Farmworth Lodge, to the right of the pub, now separated by the car park entrance, was built by the Farmworths for their coachman and gardener, Edward Shuttleworth, and his family.
Cross Manchester Road and walk past the Cart and Horses into the small section of Manchester Road which loops around the green area. Stop outside the second house, an older property called the Lingards.
42. The Lingards was built in the late 1860s or early 1870s by mill owner Thomas and Mary Farmworth, but was later named after local farmer John Lingard. The Farmworths were followed by John and Alice Arrowsmith, whose sons built the cotton mill at Astley Green. A later resident was Thomas Smith, who became the managing director of Astley and Tilsley Collieries Limited. Then, from the mid-1930s until 1983, it was the home of Lee's famous herbalist, Charles C. Abbott.
Continue past the property along Sandy Lane. At the end of the lane, take the footpath which leads through to the East Lancs Road. Cross the road safely using the central reservation, then take the footpath directly opposite. Follow the footpath until it meets Peel Lane. Continue along Peel Lane. Stop outside Peel Lane. If you prefer, you can continue alongside the East Lancs Road until you reach the traffic lights. Cross here, then return to the Lancashire Mining Museum via Higher Green Lane.
43. Peel Hall is a Grade 2 listed building, parts of which date back to the 16th and 17th centuries when it had a moat. It was largely rebuilt in the 18th and early 19th centuries, but is now at risk in a very poor condition. In 1908, the then owner of Peel Hall, Thomas Oliver Cross, leased one of his fields to the Colliery Company to build houses for the miners.
Continue along Peel Lane. You will pass 3rd Avenue, 2nd Avenue and 1st Avenue, which were miners' cottages. At the end of Peel Lane, turn left into Higher Green Lane and retrace your steps to the Lancashire Mining Museum. This is the end of the Red Route.